Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Mario Ritter will have this week's Science in the News report, and Kelly Jean Kelly will bring us America's Presidents. But first, when Leticia Miranda had a job selling newspapers in Rio de Janeiro, she earned about $160 a month. That was just enough money to pay for a small apartment home in a poor neighborhood. Miranda lived there with her 8-year-old son. Today, Brazil is facing its worst economic crisis in many years. 6 months ago, Miranda lost her job. She and her son had no choice but to move to an unused building where several hundred people were already living. Everything she owns now fills a small room that has windows but no glass in them. People who live in the building wash themselves in large garbage cans filled with water. There is a bad smell coming from the growing mountains of uncollected garbage. Pigs search for food in the center of the building. Miranda says, "I want to leave here, but there is nowhere to go. I'm applying for jobs and did 2 interviews. So far, nothing." Between 2004 and 2014, tens of millions of Brazilians rose out of poverty. Brazil was noted as a successful example for other nations to follow. High prices for the country's oil and other natural resources helped pay for social welfare programs that helped many poor people. But over the past 2 years, Brazil has fallen into the deepest recession in its history. The government has cut spending on social programs. Because of the recession, the country is no longer able to reduce the level of inequality that has existed since colonial times.
Monica DeBoll follows the economic situation in Brazil for the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington, D.C. She notes that many people who had risen out of poverty, and even those who had risen into the middle class, have fallen back. The World Bank says that about 28.6 million Brazilians rose out of poverty between 2004 and 2014. But it estimates that from the beginning of 2016 to the end of 2017, 2.5 to 3.6 million Brazilians will have fallen back into poverty. In July, the unemployment rate was almost 13%. At the end of 2004, it was 4%. DeBoll believes that estimate is low. She says it probably does not include the many formerly lower-middle-class Brazilians who are again poor. Economists say high unemployment and reduced spending on social programs could worsen the country's problems. Whenever any business announces it is expanding, many people offer to work for the company. When a university in Rio de Janeiro announced it had jobs this month for people with few skills, thousands waited in long lines to be considered for a position. The jobs pay just $400 a month. The policies of President Michel Temer are leading to cuts in social services. Among the programs affected is the Bolsa Família, the family allowance. It gives a small amount of money each month to people who earn very little. Experts say Bolsa Família was the main reason so many Brazilians left poverty when the economy was strong.
Emmanuel Scofias is an economist at the World Bank. He helped write a report on Brazil's new poor. He says social programs were responsible for almost 60% of the reduction in the number of people living in extreme poverty between 2004 and 2014. But now, as job losses are causing an increase in the number of people who need assistance from the program, fewer Brazilians qualify for it. 40-year-old Simone Batista says, "Every day is a struggle to survive." She told the Associated Press that her Bolsa Família payments were ended after her now one-year-old child was born. She wants to appeal the decision, but does not have enough money for a bus ride to the office where such appeals are made. Batista lives in Jardim Gramacho, an area in northern Rio de Janeiro. She and hundreds of other poor people find food by searching through garbage left in the area. An AP investigation found that the amount of Bolsa Família payments dropped 4 percentage points between May 2016 and May of 2017. Part of that may be the result of a government campaign against suspected corruption. Temer's administration said it had found irregularities in the records of 1.1 million people who were receiving payments. That is about 8% of the 14 million people who take part in the program. The AP reported that some families who had been receiving payments were earning more than $150 a month. That is the most people are permitted to earn and stay in the program.
Scofias noted that the program was about one-half of 1% of Brazil's gross domestic product. He said the government should add money to the program, not cut it. But experts say Congress, which approved a spending limit, will likely not agree to an increase in the program's budget. A year after the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, the city has so little money that it is not paying its workers or is paying them in small amounts over time. The budget for garbage collection, community policing, and other programs has been cut sharply. For many who live in Rio's hundreds of favelas or slums, an already difficult life is getting harder. Maria de Peña Souza is 59 years old. She lives with her son in a small house in a slum in western Rio. They want to move because their home is on a hill where landslides have killed people. But her son has not been able to find work since he completed his military service a few years ago. "I would leave if there was a way, but there isn't," she said.
Brazil's economic problems have led to an increase in support for former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. He was president from 2003 to 2010, when the economy was strong. When da Silva left office, more than 80% of those asked said they approved of his presidency. But his popularity dropped sharply after he and his party were investigated for suspected corruption. The former president is appealing a guilty finding and an almost 10-year sentence for corruption. He has more support than any other likely candidate in public opinion studies for next year's presidential election. During campaign speeches, da Silva promises that if he is elected, the economy would improve and the government would once again care for poor people. At a recent gathering in Rio, the former president used the name most Brazilians use when they talk about him. He said, "Lula is not just Lula. It's an idea represented by millions of men and women. Prepare yourselves, because the working class will return to govern this country."
An agency of the United States government says, "The effects of climate change cost American taxpayers billions of dollars each year." The U.S. Government Accountability Office, or GAO, investigates how the federal government spends tax money. In a new report, the GAO tries to estimate the amount of federal money spent on disasters related to climate change. The agency considered the possible economic effects of slowly rising temperatures in Earth's atmosphere and risks to the government. It used information about possible weather conditions based on climate models. A study from the National Research Council notes how large numerical models have become an important tool for climate scientists. Computer programs turn information about the physical world into mathematical operations. The new GAO report looked at the financial costs of extreme weather events and wildfires in the United States. The report says these have cost the government more than $350 billion over the past 10 years. The costs are estimates for federal disaster assistance programs. They include the cost of flood and crop insurance payments. This money helps businesses, homeowners, and farmers pay for damages caused by a natural disaster. The GAO warns that costs from storms, floods, wildfires, and droughts are likely to rise in the years to come. The costs noted in the report do not include the cost of three major hurricanes and wildfires this year. They are based on earlier numbers from the Federal Office of Management and Budget. Last week, the U.S. Senate approved $36.5 billion in disaster aid for the territory of Puerto Rico. The legislation also provides money for the federal flood insurance program. Congress approved $15.3 billion in disaster-related aid in September after Hurricane Harvey struck Texas and parts of the southeastern United States. That storm and two other hurricanes caused major flooding and wind damage in Texas, Florida, and other states, and the island of Puerto Rico. The GAO report predicts that disaster-related costs will only grow in the future. It notes, climate change impacts are already costing the federal government money, and these costs will likely increase over time as the climate continues to change. Estimating the costs of disasters linked to climate change, however, is difficult. This is because severe weather happens all the time. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, keeps detailed information about Earth's climate. It estimates that by the year 2100, the average temperature will be between 1.1 and 5.4 degrees Celsius higher than it is today. I'm Mario Ritter.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about John Fitzgerald Kennedy. He was also known as Jack Kennedy, or by the letters JFK. When he took office in 1961, Kennedy was 43 years old. He was the youngest elected president in United States history. Kennedy was also the first Catholic to be elected U.S. president. Kennedy's youth and religion raised questions in the minds of some Americans that Kennedy could lead the country. They wondered if he would always follow the policies of the Roman Catholic Church. But Kennedy became well known as a statesman and popular with people around the world. He was intelligent, funny, and good-looking. For many, Kennedy was a sign of new energy and hope. The public was shocked then when the president's term was violently cut short. John F. Kennedy was born in 1917 near Boston, Massachusetts. He was the second of nine children. Both his parents were Catholic, with ancestors from Ireland. Many years ago, Irish Catholics faced discrimination in the United States. But the Kennedy family was also politically powerful and wealthy. As a result, young Jack Kennedy grew up in big, beautiful houses and received a top-quality education. His family did not suffer during the Great Depression, as many Americans had. Instead, the Kennedy children swam, sailed boats, and played sports. Jack also enjoyed reading books and following the news. His older brother Joe wanted to enter politics, but Jack said he might become a teacher or writer. When he was a college student at Harvard, Jack wrote a long paper about Britain in the years leading up to World War II. A version of it was published in 1940 as a book. The war changed Jack's thinking about his future plans. During World War II, both Jack and his older brother joined the U.S. Navy. In the Pacific, Jack became a hero. He won medals for leading some of his troops to safety after a Japanese warship struck a boat they were on. But Joe was killed. In 1944, his airplane exploded over Europe. When the war ended, Jack's father urged him to follow his brother's dream of succeeding in politics. Jack agreed, and he set his sights on becoming the country's first Catholic president. Kennedy was nominated as the Democratic Party's candidate, and he was elected in 1960. He easily defeated Vice President Richard Nixon, the Republican candidate, in the Electoral College. but Kennedy won only narrowly in the popular vote. Though he was young, Kennedy brought experience to the job. In addition to being a naval officer, Kennedy had been a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, as well as a senator from Massachusetts. He also published a Pulitzer Prize-winning book called Profiles in Courage. And he had become a husband and father. He married a wealthy, well-educated woman who had been working as a newspaper photographer. Her name was Jacqueline Bouvier, but she was sometimes called Jackie. She became pregnant 5 times, but only 2 of her children would survive, a daughter named Carolyn and a son, John F. Kennedy, Jr. The family of 4 moved into the White House in January 1961. On the day he was sworn in, Kennedy gave a speech that many people still remember today. It celebrated the new generation of Americans and promised to pay any price for liberty. Supporters of the new president loved his energy and sense of hope. In his most famous line, Kennedy said, "Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country." Many young people remembered that line when they volunteered for a program Kennedy created in 1961, the Peace Corps. Other Americans remembered the line when they watched 2 Apollo 11 astronauts walk on the moon in 1969. Kennedy strongly supported the country's space program. He promised that Americans would land on the moon by the end of the 1960s, and they did. Kennedy also supported efforts to improve civil rights across the U.S., although his administration moved slowly. Calls to end legalized racism were growing stronger during Kennedy's time in office, particularly because of the leadership of Martin Luther King, Jr. In June of 1963, King spoke to hundreds of thousands of people at a civil rights protest called the March on Washington. He told the crowd that he dreamed, "My 4 little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." The March on Washington, among other events, showed the power of the civil rights movement. In late 1963, President Kennedy sent a civil rights bill to Congress and spoke to Americans about the injustice that remained in the country. The Peace Corps, the space race, and civil rights are all part of Kennedy's legacy. Kennedy is also remembered for several troubling international events. In one, known as the Bay of Pigs, Americans supported Cuban refugees in an effort to oust the government of Fidel Castro. Not only did the refugees fail, but Kennedy's government was found to be lying about their support of the effort. And Kennedy faced off with the leader of the Soviet Union, Nikita Khrushchev. In 1962, American leaders learned that the Soviets had hidden nuclear weapons in Cuba. The missiles would be able to reach the U.S. mainland easily. Kennedy ordered a blockade of Cuba. People around the world held their breath as they waited to see if the U.S. and the Soviet Union would launch a nuclear war. They did not. After several very tense weeks, Kennedy and Khrushchev reached an agreement that ended the crisis. Kennedy went on to reach an agreement with the Soviet Union and Britain to limit nuclear weapons testing. He said the agreement was one of the presidential acts of which he was most satisfied. Historians still debate Kennedy's actions and what else might have happened during his presidency. They wonder especially what he would have done about the increasing conflict in Vietnam. But Kennedy did not live to finish his first term. By November 22, 1963, Kennedy had been president for just under 3 years. The next election was still a year away, but it was time to start campaigning again. So the president and his wife went to Dallas, Texas, to connect with voters. They were riding in a car with other official vehicles that drove slowly through the center of the city. Jackie, and the Texas governor and his wife sat in a convertible, an automobile without protection over the seats. The president was waving at the crowd. Suddenly, several gunshots were fired. The president was struck twice. The governor was also hit and injured. Kennedy was hurried to a hospital, but doctors were unable to help him. News reporters announced his death to a stunned public. Hours later, Jackie Kennedy appeared next to the former vice president, now president, Lyndon Johnson. She still wore the clothes with her husband's blood on them. The events remain intense in the minds of many Americans who were alive at the time. The images remain easily recognizable parts of American history. The pictures of Kennedy's family at his funeral are especially memorable. In one, 3-year-old John holds up his arm and salutes his father's casket. Attention quickly turned to the gunman. It was reportedly a 24-year-old man named Lee Harvey Oswald. Shortly after the president and the governor were shot, Oswald shot a policeman who questioned him. Oswald was eventually detained. Officials planned to bring him to court for the death of the president and the policeman. But on the way from the police station to the jail, a local nightclub owner shot and killed Oswald. As a result, the case never came to trial. Many Americans believe the reason for the attack has yet to be clarified. Historians have a mixed reaction to Kennedy's years as a president, although their opinions are generally positive. His image with the public suffered some years after his death because of reports that he had romantic relationships with women other than Jackie throughout his marriage. In time, the public also learned about Kennedy's health problems. He suffered from severe back pain and Addison's disease. He often used strong medicine to help control the conditions. The health problems are at odds with Kennedy's image of health and love of sports. Yet even with these new details, Kennedy is still one of the country's best remembered leaders. He was a charismatic man whose career influenced many other Americans to enter public service. Americans also remember his stylish, cultured wife. Jackie Kennedy compared the Kennedy years at the White House to Camelot, the legendary court of King Arthur. Their remains, along with those of two of their children, are buried at Arlington National Cemetery, across the Potomac River from Washington. They are honored there with an eternal flame, one designed so the fire will never go out. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.